Repairing means drastic reduction in CO2 emissions, in some cases up to 80% or more.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.
This is the second episode in our series, Enabling Circularity Through Insurance. Insurance is often seen as a passive player in the economy, but this series explores how insurers can actively drive circular practices. In the last episode, Lena and Michael from Allianz presented how they look at climate risk and its relation to circularity. Today, we hear from Sören how Tryg boosted circularity in their operations. Get the key learnings from this interview on one page and share it with colleagues by signing up for the Circularity FM newsletter. You can find it at www.circularity.fm. Before we continue, I have a new offer for you. You're probably here because you want to learn, and this is for a reason. Circular economy is more than just a topic. It's a learning journey. That's why I'm happy that support for the series comes from the Endlich Academy. Endlich Academy is the first and only German language online academy completely focused on circular economy. Do you want to get a first overview about circularity? Then check out the starter course. Do you want to know more and apply the knowledge in your daily business? Then the Circular Economy Explorer is perfect for you. You are a sustainability manager, consultant, or trainer? Then the Circular Economy Pioneer course gives you the comprehensive know-how you need to succeed in your role. And here is the best part. Circularity FM listeners get 25% off with our code CircularityFM25. Visit endlich.co/academy and add CircularityFM25 as the discount code. This is CircularityFM25 in one word. You'll find the link to the Endlich Academy in the show notes. Nearly two decades ago, he joined Tryg. For many years, he worked in the automotive appraisal department before turning to supply chain. He and his team lead the supply chain-related sustainability efforts across claims processes, procurement, and partnerships in the Nordics. For 3 years, he serves as the Director of Sustainable Supply Chain. Welcome, Sören.
Thank you. Thanks, Patrick. It's a pleasure being here.
Let's talk about repair at a larger scale, but before we do so, can you give us a short introduction into Tryg?
Yes, of course I can. Tryg is one of the largest claims insurance companies in the Nordics. They have customers in Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. We've been in business for almost 300 years and provide peace of mind to customers throughout the Nordic countries. Our primary owner is Tryghedsgruppen, who also owns Trygfonden, which is an independent and non-profit association with the sole purpose of supporting the creation of more security in Denmark. Roughly one in four families in Denmark and one in five families throughout the Nordic countries are customers at Tryg. We have about 7,000 employees who provide Tryghed, which in Scandinavian languages means peace of mind, to a little over 6 million customers and handle roughly 2 million claims every year. We offer all kinds of non-life insurance products to private and commercial customers.
Awesome. That's already quite a handprint and footprint. When and why did you start to look into the topic of repair?
Well, I think that smarter solutions, including repairs, has always been in Tryg's DNA. We strive to find better and smarter solutions to almost every part of our business. But of course, by building strong partnerships throughout our supply chain, we've been able to be in front of technology and new ways of repairing and scaling. And that's helped us being on top of this topic. But of course, the general focus on climate and sustainability over the recent years has increased that interest in repairs as an essential natural first choice.
I mean, repair is
normally not the thing that that it starts with. Normally, you have your customers to experience some kind of risk damage, then reach out to you. So can you tell us a bit more how does it start? How does this normal claims process look like?
Well, I mean, that's one of the areas where we try to do things a little differently. We try to be first point of contact for our customers when an incident happens. That means that we like to have our customers contact us or our supplier directly, and then we reach out to a supplier. That means that besides being able to provide help where it's needed, it also enables us to guide the customer to a supplier who has the optimal skills and capacity for that exact task and find specialists for whatever the customer needs at the moment.
And then when does repair get relevant? I mean, some things get replaced, and maybe repair is not relevant for all kinds of insurance. When does repair enter the stage?
Well, throughout our supply chain, our partners and suppliers, they all share our intention to choose repair first whenever it makes sense. And it's built into contracts and KPIs with a lot of our suppliers, and that makes, of course, repairs relevant for almost all claim types, except obvious exceptions like stolen bicycles, where, of course, repairs doesn't make a lot of sense. But in almost any other claim type, that's how we try to prioritize. But, of course, customer experience, safety for all parties, and a financial perspective is taken into consideration in every decision, too.
Okay. You already started to provide an overview when repair makes sense on what areas. So can you elaborate a bit more on that?
Well, I don't think there are many exceptions from the perspective of repair first. I think actually whether we're talking physical therapy to avoid a knee operation or we're talking repairing car parts or personal electronic devices, it's the mindset that whatever can't be preserved with a positive result, of course, should be preserved instead of just replacing and buying new stuff. I think that's the major overall mindset.
And maybe going also a bit back to the history, is this something that has been a part of Turk or part of the insurance industry ever since, or is this a new thing?
At least in the Nordics, it's always been part of the toolbox. But over the recent years, let's say 3, 4, 5 years, the focus on repairing and circularity has increased. And I think as a company, we take a lead on that agenda because we think it's very important to us and to our customers.
Okay. And it seems to be obvious what the environmental benefit is, but what is it for you? What is it specifically for Turk to apply a repair first strategy?
Well, in general, as a general perspective, repairing, of course, means preserving the object that was already produced. That means avoiding the climate burden that related to producing a new object and in many cases transporting that object around the globe too. And that again means drastic reduction in CO2 emissions, in some cases up to 80% or more when you can repair locally instead of buying something new from the other side of the world. But also, of course, the amount of waste related to a claim is usually drastically reduced when repairing instead of replacing. Imagine the amount of avoided materials, energy, and waste if we can preserve the concrete foundation of a damaged building instead of demolishing it. It's a huge amount every time that's possible. Of course, waste has a big impact too. I think the math is actually simple. So we compare the emissions and waste created related to repairing an object, compare that to the production, transport, and disposal of a car hired on a mobile phone, and nine times out of 10 or even more, the math makes sense in order to repair instead of replacing.
So it totally makes sense what you're saying. And as a follow-up question on that one, do you then still go deeper and try to quantify this environmental benefit, or do you say, I mean, this is so obvious and it just makes sense, or do you go deeper and try to collect KPIs there?
We do quantify the effects on both materials and CO2 reductions in our claims processes. But we do more. We try to get the 360-degree perspective of the emissions rather than just calculating the reductions. So what we should do is see a reduction in average emissions on a certain claim over time, rather than just adding reductions on top of each other. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what you're looking into is actually the average CO2 emissions or material consumption on an average claim time.
Mm-hmm. And now you elaborated a bit on the environmental dimension. Of course, there's also the economic benefit of it. How does that look like?
Well, in some cases, of course, repairs are obviously cheaper than replacing. But in other cases, the financial perspective is closer to break even. And I think that has to be seen in a larger perspective, whether an isolated case might be less attractive, but over time it makes sense to support the development of more sophisticated repair techniques. And that means even when there's not a lot of money to be saved, it can make a lot of sense to work with repair techniques instead anyway. To most people, more sustainable solutions or less polluting solutions are related to a higher spend. Just think about yourself. Buy a dynamical carriage at the grocery store instead of the regular ones, and you're used to paying twice the price. But when we look at repairs and when we look at insurance claims, that's rarely the case that it gets more expensive to think of the environment too. It often goes hand in hand, but if we can do something to reduce climate impact, we also reduce cost a little, and actually we often improve the customer satisfaction too.
Okay. So that sounds to me that you also have like benefits in mind beyond economic and direct environmental benefits?
Yes, we do. Because, well, one thing is resilience in a challenged world as it is these days, it makes a lot of sense for us to be, as a society, less reliant on imports and global transport, etc. And then, of course, supporting local economy and preserving local jobs instead of buying stuff from around the globe makes a lot of sense too. Because as a financial institution, we realize that our customers make their living locally, and thus it makes sense for us to support their jobs and their workplaces locally too.
I mean, this is amazing. Like in times like these, when we have conflicts about critical raw materials, I observe a lot that companies tend to optimize their specific situation and their individual customer contracts. And although they are aware of what you just said, the overall resilience, many companies struggle to make that part of their decision-making, that there is a additional social value to circular practices. But for you, it seems to be this, I mean, of course, repair makes sense economically, environmentally, in many cases. But even beyond that, you have a systemic view in mind that's outstanding, so to say, and many, many companies still struggle to get there. Yeah? Maybe we can get a bit more specific. Can you give an example, a specific initiative where over the last years you've changed your approach to the claims process?
Yes, I definitely can. Well, as an insurance company, we work with a very wide palette of claim types. So it makes sense for us to look where we get the most bang for the buck, simply where we have the highest frequency and the lowest repair rate. And car bombers are a great example of that. Car bombers, as you know, designed to absorb minor dents and scratches, which makes damage bombers a very high frequent claim type. But also, repairs on car bombers were, at the moment we started looking into it, almost not existing in Denmark until we, as a major player, pushed hard to change that culture throughout our supply chain.
And when was that, and how popular was repair when you started back then?
Well, we started looking into it and working with bomber repairs a few years ago. But when we did, As an overall perspective, it was not a priority for the industry at all. Only a very few web shops were capable of making plastic and bomber repairs, and roughly 9 out of 10 scratched or damaged bombers were replaced at that time.
Okay. Wow. And how common is it today?
Well, over the last few years, we've been focusing very much on bringing these car parts back to life. And today, repair rates are more than tripled compared to when we started looking into this case. We're talking about 30% repairs now, as in opposition to less than 10% when we started. And also, bomber repairs have become an industrial standard across the whole branch today, meaning that for almost all car workshops, it's standard that they are able to do these kind of repairs. That means that in our portfolio alone, tens of thousands of car bombers are repaired every year with great benefits for the environment.
Wow. What you just said, is this for all the countries you're active in, or is it for Denmark, Sweden, or just to put it in perspective roughly?
Sure. The numbers are for Denmark alone. The percentages a lot with plastic repairs on cars also in Sweden and Norway. I think the one of the main drivers for the Danish project was actually benchmarking throughout the Nordic countries and the awareness that the percentage of repaired bombers were much lower in Denmark than the way in Sweden and Norway.
Okay, interesting. What are actually the measures you took to reach that improvement?
Well, data is king, and being a major player in this area, we had data to support that journey, meaning that we could cover thousands of suppliers, workshops, car brands, geography, etc. And that enabled us to create a proof of concept by simply comparing the Danish market to our neighbors and noticing that the repair rates in Sweden and Norway were much higher than the way in Denmark. So we opened dialogue with a lot of the largest workshop chains and went into collaboration with those and tried to find a way to make this also financially sustainable for the workshops to join up with us. That meant that we could use this data to benchmark workshops, car brands, etc., and look into obvious potentials. Let's say that we could see that a certain car brand had a lower repair rate than another car brand, or that the same car brand in one region of the country had a different repair rate than in other regions of the country. We used those data to have a direct dialogue with the people that were supposed to help us getting these repairs to. And they were very positive, especially when they were benchmarked with their colleagues throughout the branch. Then, of course, you have to bring the tools to the job. So what we did was team up with some experts who had the training skills and could provide the tools needed to make these repairs, and made that knowledge and these contacts available for our partners too. Simply telling the workshops that if you need help to get started with this process, call one of these guys and he'll help you get started. Now, of course, as a financial perspective, and of course, workshop have to make money too, just like the rest of us. So what we did was introduce a financial bonus per repaired item to simply motivate the participating parties to repair more bombers instead. On top of that, we applied a lot of storytelling in relevant medias and a lot of following up with workshops and car importers, etc. One thing is to get the ball rolling, but another is to keep it rolling. So a lot of following up with the parties.
Okay, on the one hand, it sounds like pretty comprehensive, and now in hindsight, it sounds also a bit easy, but I'm pretty sure you had some barriers along the way. And you mentioned so many activities. So what have been the main barriers, and how did you overcome them?
Like so many other tasks, once you've got it done, it seems easy. As I guess you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So unfreezing status quo in the old automotive aftermarket, that was by far the largest barrier. Telling suppliers that we've been working with for decades that we wanted them to do something differently. And then there was, of course, the financial perspective. They just, like everybody else, they have to make money when they go to work every morning. So we had to make it financially attractive too. So like I said, we introduced a bonus that make this significant motivation for them. And then, of course, the last great barrier was overcome by talking training and tools and providing access to training and enabling the workshops to actually obtain the skills needed.
I think that last part is really surprising to me, because I feel like these people are already so close to the car and or to the other subject, and they're mostly the experts in dealing with it. So I normally would have expected that they didn't need any training, especially from, I mean, of course, it's not your insurance colleagues who gave the training, but some experts. But that surprised me a bit that they needed specific training.
And that's often the situation with when you have some new technology. Just think about mobile phone screens, that the first people to repair were small workshops in basements, who just learned how to use this new technology and how to make these repairs a long time before the larger companies and manufacturers knew how to do this.
Insurance companies help to mitigate risks. So do circular practices. If you want to build your circular economy knowledge and de-risk your company's business, check out our partner Endlich Academy. The Starter course gives a first overview. The Explorer course provides helpful knowledge to switch from linear to circular practices. And the Pioneer course provides academic content, 70 case studies, and more than 100 infographics. Circularity FM listeners get a 25% discount with the code CircularityFM25. Visit endlich.co/academy and add CircularityFM25 as the discount code. This is CircularityFM25 in one word. You will find the link to the Endlich Academy in the show notes.
Yeah, great effort. I mean, a great journey. So let's look ahead. What do you do beyond repair?
Well, we think that prevention is a big deal, because the best claim for all parties is the one that doesn't happen. So prevention, and especially in the buildings area, it's a big deal. But also mitigation, by scoping and applying specialized skills, partial repairs are often made possible if you look at it the right way. But also recycling car parts and materials, and the use of refurbished builds is another great potential within our line of business. And then I'd like to mention actually the social aspect too, because we work with our supply chain to try and ensure fair conditions for our workers throughout the whole supply chain. So the social aspect is very important for us too. I mean, we're a business that sells security and peace of mind to people. So the people aspect is, it's an important part of our sustainability strategy. So
definitely. So are there any specific plans for the next 2 years?
Well, that's one of the great things about working with sustainability. But one thing's for sure, the job isn't done yet. We're in next year either. So yeah, we still have a lot of cases and suppliers to look into, and a lot of processes to improve. But like I said, buildings, prevention, mitigation, and of course, adapting to climate changes is very high on our agenda. And then from a very overall perspective, I think we all, through all industries, need to scale and systemize circularity within all industries, ranging from cars over mobile devices to buildings, etc., to really get the snowball rolling. We have to put circularity into the system.
I mean, Søren, this is really amazing how you already brought that change to the world, to the Nordics, and sounds great to see what your plans are. Thanks for sharing your experience.
You're most welcome. My pleasure, Patrick.
This was the second episode in the series Enabling Circularity Through Insurance. You can find the key learnings from this conversation and an overview of upcoming circularity events in our newsletter. Sign up at www.circularity.fm.
In the next episode, we examine the popular narrative of how switching to more circular business practices can de-risk your company's operations. Stay tuned and all the best in driving a profitable circular economy. And please don't forget, the most abundant renewable resource is your imagination.
My name is Patrick Hübscher, and this is Circularity FM, the podcast about understanding, building, and managing circular business models.